I think my favorite thing about free agency so far was the guy who, and I apologize for not remembering the username, and I don't want to say guy because that's also speculative, but the person who believed that Justin Schultz
saw that
had returned to the Anaheim Ducks.
That's okay.
When in
that
fact,
happens.
It was Jeff Schultz.
You just see Schultz. That's okay. These things happen. I'm not perfect.
I mean, yeah,
I saw it too, and I'm like, no. And I was like, I wanted to respond right away, but I'm like, yeah, just leave it. Because usually, you know what? Usually what happens in situations like that, people realize after a little bit, my bad, dumb. Mm-hmm. I had the wrong guy. Mm-hmm. And they'll correct themselves.
Yeah, I mean, and in his defense, those are, I think, the only two Schultzes left in the league at this point, right?
We need some more Schultzes. That's a problem. With
this league. That's right. We have a real, I mean, if we had more Schultzes, chances that we would have a German team in the next World Cup of Hockey dramatically increase.
You know, I think of German hockey, and one of the reasons why that program hasn't developed as it probably should, unlike the Swiss, unlike the Finns, who are at a different planet right now, unlike the Swedes, is that their import rules are too lax. They don't develop internally enough. That they leave a lot of open space for people from other countries to come in. Here I am, sound like Donald Trump. The hockey's Donald Trump. They leave too much for these damn foreigners to come in. No, but they're not really developing their own talent, which is interesting because I remember having a conversation with Brian Burke about this when he was with Toronto. I was doing a Marlies game, and we were talking about, I think we were talking about Corbinian Holzer. And he said, you know, one day, and I think it's a good point too. He said, one day Germany has the potential to be a hockey powerhouse. Because you have an entire country with a very strong athletic culture and one that is, you know, when it comes to sports, can be very determined. And if they want to be number one, they will be number one, or they'll at least be in that conversation mm-hmm. with some other big countries in Europe that I just named as well. But you're right. That may be – because, look how long it took the Swiss, right? And the Spengler Cup has been around, like, since forever. Like, high-end hockey has been around forever in Switzerland. How come Germany hasn't risen at the same time? Smarter people than me are listening to this podcast right now and have an answer. Can someone please share it with me? How come Germany isn't
obviously
more of a superpower in hockey right now?
They need someone to rise up and give the people both structure and in fear. What? No?
Structure and fear. Although, what? You know what? I'll tell you, of all the, and I know tons of them, a lot of guys that retire and sort of string it out in Europe, Germany's a hell of a place to finish the career. Oh, I've told you about the one infamous player from the Western Hockey League who had his jersey retirement ceremony at a massage parlor. Did I tell that story on the podcast?
No, you did not.
Yes. Quite a place to finish up the career.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had his one very specific massage parlor that is that is famous for the boys. And they were going to retire his jersey for – I'm going to be really vague here. I'm not even mentioning the guy's name is the team that he played on. But he insisted that if they were going to retire his jersey, that they retired it at the massage parlor. If you go into this place, as I'm told, if you walk in, you'll see his jersey hanging on the wall.
All-time leading scorer in the National Hockey League of German descent. Who is it?
Marco Sturm.
No. Now, according to Quant Hockey, because they're counting they're counting him, I guess, as having being of German descent. Walt Tkachuk.
Oh, the old Ranger.
678 points to Marco Sturm's 487. All-time leading goal scorer is Marco Sturm with 242.
Sturm.
In fact, there's only been three players of German descent. Mm-hmm. Or born in Germany, if you will, that have cracked 100 goals in the National Hockey League. One is Marco Sturm.
Yeah,
Danny Heatley doesn't count, according to this.
Wasn't he born in Germany?
Who is the third?
Jochen Hecht.
It was born in Canada, wasn't he?
No, I don't think so. Hang on.
And Jochen Hecht is the correct answer, by the way.
It is?
Yep, you go. Awesome.
Dude was born in Freiburg, Germany. Danny Heatley. Get lost. Yeah.
I don't know why they don't count him then.
But they count Walt Tkachuk?
Wait, am I looking at all players or active players? Well, it should be all
players. I assure you that Walt's not playing anymore.
Thank you.
I don't know much, but I know that.
All right.
Walt Tkachuk.
bigger and better things. Back to that free agency thing. We haven't talked since July 1st. What, if anything, stuck in your craw about the free agent frenzy? First of all, I'll say this about it.
Okay.
Normally,
I love how you set up these questions. I'm going to ask myself.
Single worst co-host.
What do you think? And by what do you think, I mean, I'm going to tell you what I think. Go ahead.
It's all of a sudden become a Charlie Rose interview. normally you hear a lot about, you know, the teams that stayed on the sidelines are the real winners. But you didn't hear a lot about that this time. I feel like teams, by and large, made good signings, and that certain teams that were active made smart additions to their teams versus the usual thing we hear, which is that if you're dabbling in unrestricted free agency, you're just a loser.
There were some teams that really couldn't do anything.
Like the Rangers.
That's exactly where I'm going. Like they're we talked about this at the end of last season. That was their last gasp. Like that was it. Tank is empty. I know Lundqvist loves New York and doesn't want to leave, but that's the play. If you want to take that next step to getting this team back to respectability, you know, the Ottawa Senators,
mm-hmm.
you know, did they have room to do anything after firing a coach and bringing in a new one?
No, not really.
You know, so there was some that sort of, and then we went over the ones that, that Minnie said had lobotomies last week. And handed away franchise players.
Uh-huh.
You know, well, Washington was kind of quiet. I mean, bringing in Lars Eller.
Yeah,
was about it. But then again, there's some teams that don't need to do anything. Like Washington's a good example. You know what you do with Washington? Leave it. If you can find someone to replace Orpik, you do it. But unless you have that guy, then just leave it right now.
Let's go back to the lobotomy. I don't know what, you know, there's a lot of crazy coming out of Montreal, but like it's a special kind of crazy that after you've traded PK Subban, your next move, if he had agreed to it, was to sign the most hated rival of your team to a contract. And like that Milan Lucic flirtation was real. There's negotiations. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't just a, I'm going to call up this guy and see if he wants to come play for the team. I mean, maybe it's because Dale Weiss isn't there to, you know, to be murdered anymore, as Lucic's threatened. But it is crazy to me that you would, like, are you just actively trolling your fan base now that you'd go down that avenue?
First big body check, first big fight, they would love him.
You think so?
You know what's interesting to me? This was the first year, this was the first off season we heard the L word. Lockout.
Oh, yeah. And also the B word for bonus money.
And the other B word for buyout protection.
Yep.
Like a lot of bonus, which means, to your point, Wish, buyout protection and lockout protection. Yeah, I can't tell you how many agents I talked to this year said, yeah, man, and we got lockout protection. Or, yeah, man, and we got buyout protection.
Oh, yeah.
This was the first summer that I talked to agents who like, front and center, we need buyout protection. That year, my guy's still getting paid. Or, you know what? If it doesn't work out for my guy, he ain't going to get bought out because it makes no sense. He's still getting paid.
Do you think that's more – because here's my question about this lockout coming up. Do you think that's more protection against amnesty buyouts and things like that? Or do you think that's more protection against what I think is coming, which is our next salary rollback? Because this lockout seems to be of the ilk – of all of the owners saying, oh my goodness, spending is out of control. Look what you all have done except for me. And then asking for a way to remedy some of these contracts.
Are we talking about, we want to talk about Minnesota now? Or do you want to get to Minnesota? Is that, sorry, were you dovetailing to Minnesota there? Or, oh, I was just going
are
back
they
to
still flash, signed? Are they still signed through that lockout?
Flashback to, I believe so. Why don't we just go have a look here as we have a nice little laid-back podcast here. It's summertime. So
yeah, that'd be 2025.
General Fanature. Yeah,
2025. Yeah, that would be the two contracts that we're talking about here. One making 7.5 and one making 7.5. And wouldn't those cap hits look better at about 5.5?
Yeah.
This one seems like doesn't it seem like that kind of not a lockout where we're just like tightening the screws and the players a little bit, a lockout where we're putting the screws to the players. Like that's what it
seems
like.
So this is going to be circa 2004 where the Players Association offer like 25% back and the owners say, okay, thank you. And we'll put that in our hip pocket. Now let's keep negotiating.
This is the kind of lockout where we say, boy, you know, McDavid would be on his third cup now were it not for that lost season.
Speaking of McDavid, did you not get the sense that, and maybe it's just when you see the Aaron Ekblad contract, that we are going to see a juggernaut deal next year, 1 year out of free agency?
For Connor?
That at this time next year, we're talking about a $15 million hockey player.
In the sense that they're already getting their financial ducks in a row, yeah, I think so.
Wow.
By the way, if you're Connor McDavid, why do you sign? Like, I wish this league wasn't a backpat old boys BS network.
What is it,
though? But if you're Connor McDavid, someone out there would give you max across the board on an offer sheet. Just so wait until you get it.
Doesn't matter. They'll match. Like that's the one where it doesn't matter. Like you can't play the offer sheet game with Connor McDavid because there's no chance that Edmonton's gonna go, maybe we should take the picks. Not a chance. You just let someone else do your salary for you. Okay, thanks.
But here's the thing, dude. Like, how many guys get maxed though? Like the Lightning situation is. As much as we give credit to Yzerman for Stamkos' contract, and as much as we give him even more credit for Hedman's contract, which is incredible that he got him in under 8.
So good.
That's the kind of thing that happens more than what happened in Chicago. Like there aren't many degrees away the situations that we've seen in Pittsburgh with Sid and Malkin, although Malkin took a bit more money, and the situation that we just saw in Tampa. So the idea that McDavid's going to max out isn't necessarily in keeping with the hockey player aesthetic in the sense that these guys, maybe through their own humility, good old Canadian boys, maybe through their own humility or their own sense of team, don't take the max because it benefits the rest of their boys under a cap.
I get that. But Connor McDavid is our group. And if you look at who, and I know Nash busted the bridge idea, but if you look at the two biggies that busted the bridge and went to long-term big ticket first, Skinner and Hall, those were our group guys. Mm-hmm. Aaron Ekblad's an our group guy too.
By the way, Taylor Hall, complimentary player, I've been told.
What?
Oh,
by
that
who?
Drager. There's been a lot of sort of rethinking Taylor Hall since the trade, which has been
what
he says he's a complimentary player in the sense that he's like Kessel. He's not a star. He's a complimentary player. What? What's wrong? Is there something wrong?
Other than the fact that I completely disagree? No, nothing.
Well, then you had Andy Strickland today who said that my new favorite player, Taylor Hall, was like 10th in goals by a left wing this year or some such. And I'm like,
tell me,
yeah, but he was fifth in points.
Tell me like, what we, you know, and here's the scary thing about Taylor Hall. Again, I know I don't deliberately do this just to make you happy, but I'm about to make you very happy. Consider this.
Hold on, I'm having a little trouble with my zipper. Okay, go on.
Consider this about Taylor Hall. We still don't know how good he can be. He's never had a defense to get him the puck.
Well, he still might not.
He still might not. I understand that. New Jersey's got some horrible problems on that back end.
New Jersey's defense arguably now is worse than what Hall had for most of his years in Edmonton.
I'd have to look a little bit closer.
You have Green, you have Severson, you have Merrill. You don't have a lot there. Larson was a big part of that defense. He was top pairing with Green.
But he was an inflated top pairing guy. He's really a second pairing player, and when he plays second pairing minutes, he tends to perform better.
Here are the defensemen that the Devils currently have under contract on Fanager: Green, John Moore, Merrill, Severson, Lovejoy. So you got you got some kids, and actually the Lovejoy signing is a pretty good one for them, actually, I think, based on how he played for Pittsburgh last year, playing not fleet of foot, but good at getting that puck out of the zone pretty quick to your forwards.
That's what you want in 2016. That's what you want. Get the puck, turn it around, send it the other way. I don't know. I think he's not the best left winger. That's Alexander Ovechkin, but he's in that conversation for number two. And I don't know how you can't see that unless you just want to bury the guy and not make this look like a landslide trade in Ray Shero's favor.
Well, I think that's part of it, right? By the way, it's really funny to look at the Devils on General Fanager because you see names like Ryan Clough, Mark Savard, Dinah Zubris, Anton Volchenkov, and Ilya Kovalchuk.
That's right.
Although I think the latter two, I think Zubris and Volchenkov might finally be off the cap after those buyouts, but neither here nor there. A couple of the signings that caught my eye, I wanted to get your opinion on. Matt Martin, 4 years, $10 million against the cap for your Toronto Maple Leafs.
Look at the bonus structure. Look at the bonus structure.
Insofar as what?
Well, the salary is quite low. We talked about being buyout proof. There's a buyout proof deal. Mm-hmm. Can't buy him out.
There was an interesting trend, I think, though, this year. Martin goes to the Leafs, mm-hmm. and Lucic goes to Edmonton. And there was one more signing that was of the, here is the toughness that this group needs. Oh, Okposo to the Sabres was the same kind of thing. Not necessarily in the same way that Lucic is tough, but in the sense of like power forward, doing dirty work, making room for the kids.
I'm a lot more comfortable with the Okposo deal to Buffalo than I am with Lucic to Edmonton. Aren't you?
I'm
a lot more comfortable with Kalaposo's $6 million a season. AAV.
I think so too. And even if you have to play him down the lineup, like who cares, right? Like he's a great player. He's a great player in a lot of different roles. And at the end of the day, he's going to be the kind of guy you need in that lineup to excel. The thing about Lucic that I find fascinating is not only the Mark Messier to the Rangers effect that people seem to believe he'll have on this team. Now they're not easy to play against because of Lucic. But it seems like a real short-term decision for a team that clearly is still in long-term thinking. Like, over the next 3 years, this deal could look real smart, but not much more after that. Do you know what I mean?
And that's where you look at the last 3 years of that contract. Okay? Last 3 years of that contract, $4 million, $3 million of it is signing bonus. Mm-hmm. Then it goes to $5 million, $2.5 million is signing bonus. Then the last year of the contract, where it could get ugly, $4 million salary is the number, $3 million of it is signing bonus.
Right.
It's a buyer-proof deal.
The thing about this signing that I also think is real interesting is I feel like it's a real proof of concept signing. Like, they had the slap and no move on it. It goes no trade in the last 2 years. They had to give him all that signing bonus. They had to really sexy it up in order to get him, even though I don't think there was I feel like this contract is probably as much as he'd get anywhere else. But
I don't know about that. I don't know. Was everyone offering that much for Lucic?
No,
honestly, because I know a lot was made of the Connor McDavid magnet, and I get that.
That's what I'm talking about.
It the Connor McDavid magnet, or is it this is the best deal I could find on the market?
Well, listen, Edmonton is clearly in a place right now where they still have to overpay. I mean, they're not a winning team. You have to overpay someone to come to a place that hasn't been in the playoffs since, you know, Dwayne Roloson. But the thing about it, though, is that you get – how much of that investment is worth it when now you have the quote-unquote prize of free agency, not only choosing your team, but saying, I'm choosing this team because of McDavid? Like, that's mm-hmm. big. That's a really important thing
saying
for the Oilers to have. Yeah.
Saying it's huge. Just like those long-term deals that all those kids signed to stay there, to make that commitment. That was a big deal at the time, too, blowing off the second contract.
Right.
But that was, too, we're committed to this marketplace or we're committed to the best deal we can possibly get, and this is it.
it's a little different when you're an RFA, though. When you're a UFA like Lucic is, and you choose Edmonton, and you're saying it's because of McDavid, well, that at least sends the signal to anybody else that, okay, if he's willing to come here, a guy who was chasing a ring, you know, for the last couple of years, like, if he's willing to go there, then maybe I should rethink it. Maybe I should come there, too. Maybe they're building something. Maybe he's a good guy to be the judge of it, even though he's Pierre Chiarelli's boy.
What was more important? They opened up the first line left wing spot, or it was the most money he could get?
It's the most money he can get.
Because they did both.
They did both, but even Lucic said he's not guaranteed to play with McDavid. Like, they'll give him a shot, but it's not like he's going there being like, you know, it's McDavid or bust. I don't know. It's an interesting moment for that franchise. Now the question is,
I honestly still think that Pouliot's the best choice on the left side with McDavid. I may be in the minority on that, but I really do love Benoit Pouliot. And I think with Connor McDavid, he's outstanding.
Now, do you think they end up swinging something for Tyson Barrie? I wrote about that on Puck Daddy today. Do you think that Tyson Barrie is in the cards for them?
Well, doesn't it seem like this is, you know, Ryan O'Reilly 2.0 to you?
Well,
for whatever reason, and I don't know, I guess familiarity breeds contempt. How come everybody else can see it except for Colorado?
Right.
How, like, everybody. Like, it's near universal. This guy's going to ARB.
Well, I think there's something to the idea of, you know, and this goes for a lot of places. Like, if you can kick a problem down the road a year, you do it. And you can kick this problem down a road a year. Once you get that 2-year deal out of arbitration, and then there was some confusion about it. I think he is an RFA after that 2-year deal is done as well, because I think his 10 years were burnt when he was 20, or 10 games rather was burnt when he was 20. So I think he's still RFA. So there's you have some room here to futz around with Barrie if you wanted to. The question is do they want to? Do they see him in the same way that others see him? And I don't think they do. But to me, it's like, if you're Edmonton, though, like, there's still that issue of it's Edmonton. Just like there's always going to be that issue of it's Winnipeg. And if you're Tyson Barrie, you know, what's to say that you're going to sign long-term in Winnipeg? Just because of Connor? I mean, Lucic did. That doesn't mean everybody else will. It's tough.
It is. It is. But, you know, this is the byproduct of the salary cap, where all of a sudden players had to make decisions not just based on who's going to pay me the most. We talked about this last time. Whole host of other things. All of a sudden, quality of living became a huge issue. Humongous issue, because you couldn't buy your way around it. Why do you think teams have, like, entire city presentations for free agents?
Right.
Think they did that before the cap?
Although, honestly, like, you know, as much as it's fun to play this game, and as much as it's fun to hear, you know, Stamkos is meeting with, like, the mayor of Toronto and the CEO of Canadian Tire, you know, I'd have to admit I have a little free agent envy when it comes to the NBA, and, like, Tom Brady is trying to recruit free agents to Boston and shit. No one's doing that for our guys. Like, it's not like, you know,
it is pretty awesome.
You know, Bautista's coming over to meet with Stamkos.
He might not even stay. Stamkos got to lure him back to Toronto. That's what happened. Dude's gone to come back from turf toast, play out the rest of the year, then he's gone.
Yeah. But it's, I feel you on that. And, I guess we have George Richards coming up to talk about the many, many, interesting things that have happened with the Florida Panthers in the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Couple things about two other free agents I wanted to touch on. The first is David Backes. And I have a hard time figuring out what the play is here for Boston. One idea I've heard is that maybe they don't play him at center and they try to move him up into a Lucician role in that lineup, which I guess makes a little bit of sense. But a 5-year term for David Backes gives me a lot of pause.
Yes, it does, considering he has both Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci ahead of him, to which my response is, when I first saw the signing, are they trying to trade David Krejci?
Yeah, and clear out that salary space.
That's the first thing I saw. It's like, okay, Krejci's making 7. They don't need, you know, 3 $6.5 to $7 million centermen. So who's the odd man out? You're not touching Bergeron.
Right.
So Krejci's the odd man out. And then the question becomes, Does he go to St. Louis?
Krejci?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a lot of money between him and Stastny.
Sure is a lot of money.
Is Stastny, I forget, can he be exposed? Let me look that up right now. This has become like the General Fanager podcast. Stastny. UFA in 2018. Nope, just a no-trade clause. But then he only has one year left on his contract, so I don't know if he's necessarily the greatest expansion draft bait.
You know who we should have on the podcast?
General Fanager.
Tom, yeah. We should get Tom on the podcast. That's who we should. Next podcast, let's get Tom.
All right.
Tom from General Fanager.
No, that's an interesting connection there. And also, like, you're waiting for the Blues to do something up front now that they've lost Brouwer and Backes. The other signing I wanted to mention.
And Shattenkirk's going somewhere.
You'd figure that, too. The other signing I wanted to mention, because I feel like people dropped Trow and pooed all over it for some reason, was Louis Erickson to the Canucks. 6 years, $6 million per season. And people are like, why would you do that? Like, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, well, listen, okay? They're not going anywhere. We know that. But part of the reason they're not going anywhere is because you have to wait until the Twins retire. In the meantime...
But that's only 2 years. But that's only 2 years.
But, like, in the meantime, you have Erickson to play with the Twins for 2 years, and that's going to be a lot of fun because they play together really well in the Olympics and stuff. And then after that, you have to have some salary on your team. And what's wrong with Louis?
Then you have four more years of mid to late 30 Louis Erickson.
Oh, but who cares? He's a good dude. Like, you have to have some... You can't just have it be a barren wasteland, and it's not like having Corey Schneider on your team where he prevents you from winning the lottery like the Devils have right now. He's just a good guy to have on your team. He plays with the Twins a couple of years, and then he's there. And he's making money, so he can reach the salary cap floor.
So then he's there to... Okay, there. That's what I was waiting for. So then he's there to help you make the floor.
Right. Exactly. Assuming that's a direction. But then again, you never know with these idiots out there where they might be content to tread water. Sneakers swam for the first time this past weekend, by the way. And it reminded me of the Canucks moving all of their limbs as fast as they can to make sure they don't sink, even if it doesn't make any sense to do so.
Because the owner wants playoffs. Damn it. They're going to get playoffs.
You know, right.
the one signing that I liked, and I know we always focus on the hits and the suspensions and all that, but I think anybody who was in the know and really paid attention to this guy's game think this is a marvelous deal. I certainly do, and it's all salary, no bonus, outside of, I think, the first year. And that's the Philadelphia Flyers with Radko Gudas.
Oh, yeah.
Who we all think is, oh, that monster who's destroying guys. Look at the possession numbers of Radko Gudas, and look at the quality of competition that he played against, and look at how they used him. And it's not a slight on Shane Gostisbehere, although he got all the headlines, and as well he should. He was protected in a lot of situations. Got the big slap shot. We all know that. Great on the power play. Shane Gostisbehere got the headlines. Go ask Barry Trotz who the Flyers' best defenseman was. Go ask Ron Hextall who the Flyers' best defenseman was. Radko Gudas, and they got him in at a bargain.
They did.
They got Radko Gudas in at $3.3 million. That is a great, great signing for the Philadelphia Flyers. Ignore the Zibanejad hit. Focus on the hockey he plays. It's outstanding.
They have to figure out one more piece up front. But boy, they got a nice little team going on the back end right now, especially with Mason back there too. Hextall's doing a good job. Hextall is building something pretty good over there.
Yep.
Real quick before we get to George, the other thing that I noticed too, and you mentioned the lockout influence, was the expansion draft influence. And particularly the Darren Helm deal, expansion draft. The David Schlemko deal, expansion draft. Reimer's deal I thought would have him on the hook for the expansion draft, but then people said, well, maybe you should rethink that because Luongo's got a no trade, so he could be exposed in the expansion draft, and then you have Reimer locked up in perpetuity to replace him. But there were a few deals that made me
think, So you expose Luongo?
That's the thought. You expose Luongo and have Reimer as your goalie.
I wonder how many guys would grudgingly, because it's not really their choice, be exposed in an expansion draft and perhaps let it be known through various ways that if they were picked up by New Jersey, they'd retire.
They would retire. Yeah. That's...
Like, just to have it out there.
You mean Las Vegas. He said New Jersey for some reason.
Oh, New Jersey. Las Vegas. I apologize.
I don't think they're giving the Devils. Las Vegas. I don't think they're giving New Jersey a second team. We have a hard enough time filling the building for one. Thank you.
I think Ron Lowe felt that way once upon a time.
That's a really good question. That's really good. But I think that's why, you know, typically you shy away from players at a Luongo's age. But that's a really good point. Because, I mean, obviously he doesn't need the money. And obviously he wants to stay in Florida with his family.
Yep.
That's a really good point.
Just, you know what, but very, not so subtly. Maybe it's through people in the media. Maybe someone we're going to talk to here in a couple of moments. Who knows? Unnamed sources say if Luongo's taking the expansion draft, he'll retire. I don't know. I just sort of throwing out, because I think we're all going to sort of, you know, imagine what this expansion scenario is going to be like for Las Vegas and this draft is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I keep coming back to is how many guys float out there that if they're picked, they'll retire.
Yep, and that's why, you know, you're starting to see your first members of the Las Vegas Black Knights or just Knights. You know, your Dale Weises and your Darren Helms and your David Schlemkos. Of course, Captain Dustin Brown.
Yeah.
Come on,
that's
now.
Fun.
I mean, really. And honestly, they would be smart.
And he's already happy to go to war with his team.
Yeah, and they would be smart to take him, too, because they have to fulfill a certain salary obligation to the NHL within the players to take in this draft. He signed for, you know, too many years, and he's got a couple cups to his name. He's a perfect expansion draft player.
Las Vegas whatevers.
Oh, God. We're buying the jersey tomorrow. Brown 23 on the back and
woo,
whatever the hell they're going to put on the front. It's not going to be a militaristic army logo, though, because the Florida Panthers beat them there.
He's another West Point guy. We got two West Point guy people in the NHL now.
And joining us down the line, the guy who covers the West Point Panthers, it's George Richards of the Miami Herald, to talk about all of the things that they've done recently. George, thank you for taking time away from wherever you are, wearing shorts and a hat, I'm sure, and being here on the podcast.
I wear shorts, sandals, and I've got a cup of Tim Hortons, so I'm ready to talk
to you.
Whoa! Oh, here we go.
All right, so Aaron Ekblad signs the big deal, the big extension. How much of that do you think was trying to ensure that no one took a run at him with an offer sheet?
How many offer sheets have we seen lately? I don't think the Panthers were really worried about that. I think it was more of the ownership saying, hey, July 1st, we can extend this guy to the max. He's interested in the max deal. You know, and I think it was just them, you know, coming to an agreement pretty quickly. You know, July 1st, you know, you couldn't talk before then, wink, wink. But, you know, that was a deal. You know, you talk about Aaron Ekblad, you know, he said he's only seen the good times in Florida. He was the first overall pick in 14, and that's when they started turning things around. You know, he hasn't seen the bad times in Florida, and maybe he never will, but, you know, good move, I think, for both sides.
How much does a loss of Brian Campbell hurt both Aaron Ekblad and the franchise?
I think it hurts just because of the way that Brian Campbell, I mean, you look at his tenure in Florida, when he got here in 2011, they put him with Jason Garrison, and Gary has a career year and moves on, gets the deal with Vancouver's now in Tampa Bay. Everybody that the Panthers put with Brian Campbell was a better player. I think that's the best thing you can say about Brian Campbell. Everybody talks about how, you know, how he moves the puck and everything and what a great defender, you know, defensive player he is and offensive player, you know, whatever. But I think him just making players better was the biggest thing he did in Florida. I mean, you look at Ekblad. You know, he played a little bit with Kulikov, not a whole lot, but you know, he made everybody around him better.
Tom Gilbert's a big one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Gilbert and Campbell together, and with all due respect to Tom Gilbert, a lot of that heavy lifting was Brian Campbell. I think that's a tough loss for the Florida Panthers, and I don't know that bringing in Keith Yandle at 6.3 is an automatic replacement for him, but in the Panthers' eyes, is that what it's supposed to be?
I would think so. Yeah, I mean they play a similar game. They're both, you know, they never miss games. I think Keith Yandle's going to help on the power play. I think Florida's power play is vastly improved, at least on paper right now, over what it was last year. when it was 23rd in the league and was a detriment in the postseason. I think the Panthers are very happy to be able to get a guy like Keith Landle. Once they knew that Brian Campbell was going to test the free agent market and probably knew that he was going to take a major league discount to stay in Chicago, you know, they had to move on, and I think they got the best replacement for that kind of player that they could have.
They already have 9 guys under contract for the 2020-21 season. And not all of them are Barkov, you know, or Ekblad. Some of them are Riley Smith, and some of them are, you know, Bukestad and players like that. And like, I just wonder, like, do you think it's good business to have all these guys locked in long term before you know if it all works?
Well, I think the way the Panthers are looking at it, I mean, they're financial guys. I mean, you know, the Doug Cifu and Vinny Viola have come from the financial market of New York. I think they're looking at this as, you know, looking at the cap and how it works and how they can use that to their advantage. And I think that the way they look at it long term, if everything works out, they're getting these guys at pretty good prices, and they feel like that in 2, 3, 4 years, if everything works out, now that's the big if, you know, these are going to be very nice contracts to have, especially in a cap league, where the Panthers, when you look at all the young players who mostly now are locked up, I mean, Jonathan Huberdeau is really the only young gun that they need to sign. Everybody's locked up and they've got to pay a lot of guys. Now, you know, you look at the way the league works, you can't keep everybody. A lot of teams have seen that. But the Panthers feel like the way that they're maneuvering the cap, that they may be able to just do that, may be able to suffer, you know, to be able to absorb some bad contracts, or some, you know, some deals that maybe don't work out for when most of them do. So, they're just looking ahead. They're looking forward.
Last 3 of the 4 years, I believe this is right, seasons for Florida, Jonathan Huberdeau has been the leading scorer, rookie of the year as well. That to me, George, says 6 million times 6 years. Are they going to have the money to pay Jonathan Huberdeau here?
They believe they do. I mean, I haven't looked at all the particulars, and I think, you know, you're going to look at maybe 3 years down the road when the Panthers, when all these contracts have kicked in, you're going to see the Panthers be right at the cap limit, and they're obviously hoping that it goes up a little bit, but they've got some dead money that's going to disappear this year next, so they believe that they know what it's going to take to sign Jonathan Huberdeau, and I've been told they believe that they can get a deal done.
Do you think some of that, sorry, George, as a follow-up, do you think some of that dead money is Jaromir Jagr? I mean, it's a wonderful story. We all love him. We love to see 68. But if you're a team that's, you know, taking that next step, not just to get to the playoffs, but to win a round or two, can you really afford to have Jaromir Jagr, future Hall of Famer as he may be, Jaromir Jagr at $4 million on your roster in a first-line spot?
I believe, you know, who knows? I mean, we don't know the future. If you would have asked us that 4 years ago, you would have said no. I mean, Jagr's going to be retired by now, and lo and behold, he leads the team in scoring. So you just don't know, and that's the beautiful part of the Jagr contract. It's 1 year. I mean, if he falls off the face of the earth, okay, you know, maybe you bring him back open and he bounces back at half the money, whatever. But it's a one-year deal. It's a deal that they can you know, dump or, you know, whatever, it just won't happen again. But, I do not think, yeah, you're right. I mean, they're not looking at Jaromir Jagr as being, you know, here in 4 years. That's for sure.
Well, especially with Vegas. I mean, he's obviously going there at some point. Let's just be honest.
He's the captain for life of the Vegas thing. You're absolutely right.
Hey, George, how have things calmed down behind the scenes in Florida? We had the Dale Talon thing, there was all that kerfuffle about the trainer staff and the equipment, all that nonsense. How are things down there away from the ice?
Well, you know, it was a busy couple weeks. I mean, we heard that the head athletic trainer, Dave Zanobi, was in trouble, and then he wasn't in equipment guys. We talked about earlier in the year. They were gone pretty quickly, and John Madden and the team parted ways, I think, a couple weeks after the season ended. So, and the front office shuffle that they've had, a lot of that a lot of the front office shuffles we've talked about, you know, happened during last season, behind the scenes, kind of quietly. But, yeah, things have definitely quieted down. I mean, it's obvious that they've got their focus right now on hockey. This is the management team that Vinny Viola and Doug Cifu want to go with moving forward. And, yeah, I think now that their focus is on the on-ice product right now.
Are we all then in agreement? Like, can we all just come clean and all say, we talked about this on the podcast, you know, last season as well, that even though, you know, Dale Tallon was the general manager by title and by business card, it wasn't him with two hands on the wheel this entire last season. We've got, you know, Doug Cifu on Twitter saying that Wierer and Joyce, you know, did the Smith deal and with Hayes, you know, strongly whispered, you know, wildly believed that Dale Tallon wasn't the full general manager this past 12 months.
Well, I don't know about all that. I mean, I think, you know, maybe Dale had one arm out the window and one hand on the wheel, but I think he was still steering everything. And I think, you know, the Riley Smith deal, you know, the Jimmy Hayes part of that deal, he was, you know, Dale was shopping Jimmy Hayes at the draft to the New York Rangers, thought he had a deal done. Mm-hmm. And that fell through. So on July 1st, you know, he made the deal for Riley Smith. Now, whether Steve Wierer and Eric Joyce were the ones that said, hey, this is a guy, this Riley Smith guy, we think we can get, and we think he's a very good player, and he may be what we need. That could be, but I think that's still a deal that Dale had to pull the trigger on, and Dale still made. I think it was a very underrated trade at the time. The Panthers took on the Savard contract from Boston to make it happen. And, you know, Riley Smith rewards the Panthers with 25 goals and, you know, four in the postseason. So, I think that was, another shrewd move by the Panthers. And, whoever you want to give the credit to, Dale Tallon was the one that did it. So, I think it's, another good trade for Dale.
The Dave Zanobi, if I can get, you mentioned that Zanobi was fired as head athletic trainer as well. I know that he was very close to Roberto Luongo, and he, you know, really, you know, appreciated a lot of the guys who, of course, what your head trainer does. Should we read anything into this idea that, you know, Zanobi was fired and then all of a sudden Roberto Luongo's brother comes in as a goaltending coach in Springfield?
Perhaps. I never put those two together, but yeah, now that kind of does make sense. Yeah, I think, yeah, Dave Zanobi was well liked by everybody within the organization.
Yep,
I think
sure
he was well liked by anybody who ever met the man. I mean, just one of the all time great guys, and did his job very quietly. He was the one guy that I could tell you right now, I never got anything out of. That guy was just tight-lipped, and all he wanted, the only thing we ever talked about was Cleveland Browns football. So he was very good at what he did. The players loved him, and, you know, and they made a change, and I don't necessarily know why, but, you know, that's for them to deal with. And but I know he and Roberto Luongo were very close. Yeah. You know, they did a lot off the ice together, and I know that Dave was working with Roberto after he had his hip procedure done. So, to have it, you know, to have him let go at the time he was definitely a little strange.
Last one for me, George. Anything on free agent day or the subsequent days since free agent day that really surprised you or piqued your interest?
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought once they traded for Red O'Bara, I thought he was the guy that was going to be the backup. I think a lot of people thought that. Even James Reimer said that, you know, once the Panthers made that deal a week before, you know, right before the draft, that they weren't going to have any interest in him. And obviously they did, getting him to a five-year deal. And he was in South Florida to do the deal, so he agreed to it before July 1. But, you know, I think that was the surprise, and especially as quickly as it came, I get a text message, we just signed Reimer, and I'm like, you did? I thought that was the surprise. You know, I'm like, okay, really? The goalie? Yeah. That guy? But that's a guy I know that they'd targeted, and that's a guy that we had talked about when he was still with Toronto, that what he might be a perfect fit for the Panthers moving forward at his age and his experience, and knowing that they needed somebody who could really play a little bit more. And then Tom Lowe explained, you know, that they aren't sure that Roberto Luongo is going to be 100% for the start of the season. So, it's just weird that they got the insurance first before they got the guy they wanted. So, you know, they got Berra as the insurance, then signed Reimer. So that was the big surprise for me. And then, obviously, Jason Demers the next day. I mean, we thought the Panthers were done. They, you know, they've got plenty of defensemen, and then they bring in another top four type guy. You know, I thought the Panthers did very well on July 1st and 2nd. They definitely got some groceries.
And we talked about that earlier in the show. How do you think the Reimer thing fits in vis-a-vis the expansion draft?
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know the rules of the expansion draft as well as a lot of you guys. I haven't really looked at it just because I've been on vacation and haven't, you know, paid attention. I will eventually.
Well, you get to keep one goal. You get to keep one goalie, and
right.
If and if they only have a no trade, you don't have to protect them. So in theory, Luongo can be exposed.
Well, there you go. Then you expose. You know, then you leave Roberto exposed. And you pretty much Las Vegas probably won't take that on. I mean, Roberto Luongo signed till what, 2022. You know, you would think that Roberto Luongo, you leave him exposed, and they'll take someone else, and then you know Roberto stays mm-hmm. on. And if he gets taken, it gets taken, and you find you know then you go forward with James Reimer. But yeah, I would think that. You know, if Roberto Luongo is eligible to be exposed out there, I think he would be the guy.
You know, for the last one here, George, the one that I want to go back to is Jason Demers, because I thought that was, you know, I'm not in love with the Yandel deal at all, but I do like the Jason Demers deal a ton. If you could, can you go a little bit more on the rationale and the thought process? You know, Kulikov goes, Pissett comes back from the Buffalo Sabres, Yandel comes in as a replacement for Brian Campbell. Where was the thinking behind bringing in Jason Demers? Because of all the moves the Panthers made, and I like the Reimer deal too, of all the moves the Panthers made, this is the one to me that stands out.
Yeah, and weren't you a little surprised by it? I mean,
I was, yes.
Yeah, I was surprised he wasn't, you know, he wasn't picked up on the first day, and he had said that he hadn't received many calls. And then Friday night, he gets a call from the Panthers, you know, checking his interest. I think he just kind of fell in their lap. I think they were in the office and they were looking through what was available, and they're like, yeah, this is a good opportunity for us. And, they were able to hammer out a quick deal and get another strong puck-moving defenseman. I mean, this is going to be a very quick defense. I think, you know, that's going to be the Panthers are going to be a fast-break kind of team. They've got the offensive firepower up front, and now you've got guys that can get the puck out of the zone pretty quickly on the back end. So, you know, I was very surprised to see him. I thought they were done. I thought they were very happy with what they had. But now, you know, you had Demers, and they've got as good, you know, they feel like they've got as good a blue line as any team in the league.
All right, George, you've educated us on so many things.
Yeah.
And we are thankful for your time. Please enjoy the summer in Florida and get ready for what will undoubtedly be a cup run for the Panthers next year.
Undoubtedly. Yes. Yeah, they're going to win it all this year.
Without a doubt. A guarantee is made courtesy of George Richards of the Miami Herald. Book it.
Well, and I think, you know, I'll tell you what, I thought that team they had last year was pretty darn good. I think that, you know, they should have played Tampa Bay in the second round. I think that would have been quite the intense series, but I think looking forward down the road, I think we're going to get that Tampa Bay Florida series in the postseason pretty soon, don't you?
Hope so. That'll be glorious. We've been waiting for that one for a long time. That'd be great. You know, the one thing that I hope, because the Florida Panthers this year have gone, it's pretty obvious. I mean, they've gone all in on analytics. And I've been waiting for this. We've been talking about this for a long time. You know, we're waiting for the one team to really not just hire a couple of guys, but really like as a formula and as something to move forward, to really go forward on it. I just hope that it doesn't, because of the first real team to really push forward with it, like as organizationally up, you know, top and bottom, I just hope this doesn't become the audit on whether analytics is something that should be followed closely or even believed. Because it is just the one team that are going, you know, 24/7 on this one.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think you also have a lot of good hockey people, old school hockey people. You know, I think Tom Rowe, you know, is an old school hockey guy who goes with his eyes more with the more than the math. I think, you know, Dale Talon, obviously, but I think they all want the piece, you know, any information they can get to help them analyze a player they're going to go with. So, you know, we're just going to have to see how it moves forward. I mean, you know, especially as we move forward, you know, when we're in November and they deal for a guy, is you're going to question every move they make now. Is this just because of, you know, the analytics side, or is it because this is a guy you really want on your hockey team? And I think moving forward, that's something the Panthers are going to have to answer every single deal they make.
Indubitably. Thanks, sir. Oh. We'll talk to you down the line.
Thanks, George.
All right. See you, boys.
The great George Richards of the Miami Herald, as he's known
team.
Around these parts.
It has
very
been
interesting team.
As the season wound down and as all the shuffling, I shouldn't say season. The season wound down, Penguins won the Stanley Cup. But after that, with all the dismissals and the hirings and then the free agent signings and the re-upping of the number one defenseman, it has been over the past, well, really over the past 12 months, maybe the most interesting team to cover.
Yeah.
Just because of what you mentioned, all the backstage jockeying for position and, you know, the way that
sneakers,
you know, he's got opinions on the Panthers, man.
She's like, she here. We have dogs next door, and they all start barking, and then she starts barking at them, and it's just
quiet.
Yeah, it's quiet, dogs. Quiet. You have dogs.
That's what dogs do.
What dogs do. It's come on. It's all what right. Dogs do. But it has been one of the more and again and Tom, you know, Tom and George really didn't want to go there, but I mean it was pretty obvious, you know, right from the day that Dale Talon was re-upped as the general manager of the Florida Panthers. On the exact same press release, Tom Rose was named, you know, the associate general manager. When have you ever seen that?
Right. Two teams I want to touch on. The first is the New York Islanders.
Okay.
And I feel like it's a weird thing when you have new ownership come in. They do make a splash with Andrew Ladd. I think 7 years is a little too long, but you gotta give the guy what he's looking for if you want to get him. P.A. Parento re-signing Shane Prince, bringing in Jason Chimera for a little bit of speed and sandpaper, what have you. I don't understand the Okposo situation with them. There's something we don't know there. It's weird that they would let a guy like that slip away with basically no contract talks with him. And two, I was expecting maybe a bigger splash for the Islanders, but I guess they got their plan. Guess they're going to do what they're going to do. But they're a weird team for me right now.
What is their plan?
I don't. Well, build around Tavares.
Well, I was going to say, because John Tavares has had the most, for an elite player, the most friendly team contract this side of Duncan Keith. Like, we all point to John Tavares, say how the Islanders have this guy at $5.5 million.
That's going to change real quick.
Uh-huh, it is. And is the plan just to try to minimize the damage when John Tavares says, I've been underpaid for a long time and that ends, and I'm shooting for the moon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
and don't you think he'd be well within his rights to do so?
He'd be well within his rights to say, you need to pay me to stay here because I don't necessarily have faith that this is all going to work out for me.
Right? You're not wrong.
Yeah,
you saw Kyle Okposo leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drafted and developed by the Islanders. See ya.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you. Like, I don't know what happened there, but it was obvious, what, a year out? Like, we were sitting here last year, Wish, on this goofy podcast and saying he ain't coming back. How did everybody know?
Yeah, I know.
Like, everybody knew. And all season long, oh, well, okay, watch him at trade deadline because he ain't re-signing. Like, everybody knew. How does that happen?
And then the other team that's kind of got me fascinated is the team that cleared the decks for Stamkos, the Detroit Red Wings, that didn't get a meeting with him. And they signed Franz Nielsen in one of those weird sort of like, you know, everybody had this thing pegged a week out kind of deals. And then they signed...
Well, he's this Swiss Army knife player that's just perfect for Detroit.
Sure.
Like, it's... Let's take our stereotype about this player and find a stereotypical team that could use the stereotype of this player. Oh, of course, the Detroit Red Wings.
Then they signed Vanek for a year, as he's now reached his Danny Heatley, Jonathan Chichu, former goal scorer. Well, come on.
Oh, wow. Okay, I haven't heard it that strong. I know what you mean.
Thomas Vanek got a 1-year, $2.6 million show-me contract. I mean, yeah. Come on, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's where we are right now. And then they signed Steve Ott for $800,000. I am discouraged, to put it mildly, about the Red Wings. They've got some good young players. I think we're all waiting for the big splash to happen. Nielsen's a nice signing. But when you've got to be keeping up with the Joneses in your division, and the Joneses in this case are the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning, and you know Montreal's going to be right back in the thick of things when Price is healthy, you start to wonder exactly where Detroit slots in.
Yeah, and eventually that Ablocator contract's going to really hurt them. I mean, we all know that. We all know that Henrik Zetterberg's contract's going to really hurt them. Mm-hmm. Like, I know this, they're transitioning the team to make it Dylan Larkin's team, and they should. But it's still going to be painful getting there. Now, do you think they go to now? Who goes to arbitration? Who gets there?
Of the RB people?
Of the RB DeKaisers, of the RB Mrazics. Who gets there?
Oh, I think Mrazic gets there.
I think he does too.
I don't think DeKaiser gets there, but Mrazic gets there for sure. Yeah, that's a headache.
I'm with you on that one. We're same brain on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they do DeKaiser, but Mrazic makes it to ARB.
It's amazing. Ken Holland's an interesting guy. I love him because, of course, he championed the death of the shootout, and anyone who does that obviously is going to be top of the pops in my book.
Hasn't killed.
But you talk about general managers that have absolutely no faith from the fan base right now, and he is not on a Bergevinian level, but pretty damn close. Like, Red Wings fans have absolute, like, I got so many messages in the last few days about Holland.
I know.
And just, like, nobody has faith in this guy.
Well, how quickly have you forgotten? Like, hang on. You have done so well with this general manager for so many years.
Right.
For so long. And it starts to turn, and all of a sudden you turn on Ken Holland? Really? You think he's going to have the Midas touch his entire career?
But I also wonder how much of that is kind of glancing over and seeing what Stevie's done in Tampa and knowing obviously that he'd be in Detroit if Holland had stepped up to a bigger, like to the Dale Talon job.
Much like what Stevie's done in Tampa, Kenny had Nick Lidstrom. Stevie's got Victor Hedman.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's true.
Steve walked into a situation where there were great young pieces there. And it's not as if Steve's hit home runs. I mean, you think of the draft, for example. And, you know, looks like they narrowly averted whiffing on Jonathan Drouin until saner heads prevailed all around.
Mm-hmm. He's done an amazing... We haven't really touched on Stevie too much.
Like, great job. Great job. Especially the Hedman deal.
Yeah, the Hedman deal is incredible. And, you know, to get him in for that number, you get the Carl buyout. You get Vasilevskiy in there for a nice contract, too, that's going to give them incredible flexibility with Bishop. Just smart, smart, smart.
Now what do you do with Bishop?
You keep him this year, I think. I don't know. Like, I know that there's going to be an appetite to trade him, but the problem is that the most logical partner is Dallas, and they either have to find another way to get rid of one of those goalies, or you have to take one of those goalies back. And you can't do that.
Oof.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to have to, Jim Null's going to have to eat half a contract of a goalie.
But he doesn't, because obviously he's told us time and time again, those goalies are the goalies that gave us all those points in the regular season. Ain't no problem with those goalies. No, sir. Goalies.
It was elite level forward and John Klingberg.
Who, by the way, is going to be great with Hambus. I love that Hambus signing, at least for this year.
Yeah. How'd they get him at that number?
He wanted it because he had very few places he wanted to go. That was one of them. As was the case with the trade deadline. But the Canucks said,
Chicago and Dallas.
No, you're not going to get anything back for this asset.
Oh, man, that hurts.
Finally, I want to point out something about Shea Weber that I find kind of interesting.
Okay.
Shea Weber is going to wear number 6 with the Montreal Canadiens. Okay. Mm-hmm. As did Toe Blake. No. As did Ralph Backstrom. As did Jimmy Roberts. As did Pierre Mondeau.
Yep.
But after that, it's a lot of kind of guys that have been there for 1 year, 2 years, here and there. And Marenz isn't
Tom
really...
Tom Christopoulos, one of them?
Christopoulos, yeah. Marenz isn't really associated with number 6, obviously. I would imagine Ralph Backstrom and Toe Blake would be the competition. And you know I love this.
Toe Blake. Blake, Locke, and Maurice Richard were the line.
But you don't think there's a chance that Shea Weber could be the best player to ever wear number 6? Or is he going to be number 2 to Toe Blake?
Not where he's at right now. Right. He's 31 years old. He's been on decline the last few seasons.
It's true. He has. I'm not going to deny that. Now, here's the other question. Will Andrew Shaw be the best player to ever wear number 65? His competition right now, Andrew Shaw will wear... We have been told that he will wear number 65 with Montreal. Okay.
Bien. Yep.
His competition right now is from the 2003-2004 Canadiens, Ron Hainsey.
Yeah, and they lost him to Columbus on waivers, if I'm not mistaken.
Honestly,
as a young player, am I wrong about they lost Hainsey on waivers?
Right.
As a youngish
player. I think
player.
They did. Yeah.
They did too, didn't they, to Columbus.
I've always said this about players. Like, if you go to a team, pick a number where you're going to be the best at that number. Montreal is a tough place to do that. But honestly, if you're out there in the listening audience and you're a player and somehow you have the good fortune of signing a contract with the Montreal Canadiens, do yourself a favor and take number 80 because you're going to be better than Ben Maxwell. And do yourself a favor and grab,
hey,
you know,
number
86 because you're going to be better than Jonathan Ferland. You know that.
Let me go back to your favorite topic at the top of the podcast, Taylor Hall. There were some eyebrows raised when
I know where you're going with this.
And had number 4. If you're Taylor Hall, sure you were at number 4, you know, win Memorial Cups, win your Spitfires, first overall draft pick. Walk into an organization where the guy who wore number 4 is still a senior manager in that organization in Kevin Lowe, who wore it. A number that should probably be retired by the Oilers by now, hasn't been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you still wear number 4? Like, I just thought that was a pretty ballsy move, walking in there to Edmonton, to the old Northlands Coliseum, home of how many Stanley Cups, you know, with number 4 patrolling the blue line with Paul Coffey and Randy Gregg and Charlie Huddy, and you wear number 4. That ever strike anyone else as kind of, I don't know, that's a weird one. I always found that kind of strange.
Sure. But now they'll take it out of circulation, right? They should at least. Or do you have to wait until Taylor Hall retires?
I think you see on how Adam Larson plays, and then you decide what you're going to do with number 4, if you're going to retire it or not. If you want to remind people.
I love uniform number talk. It's one of my favorite things. The
digits. You dig it, eh?
I do. Yeah. Can't wear number 4. I don't even know what number he's wearing in Jersey. Have they decided that?
Devils, I have not
roster.
Seen
do it. Let's see here. Taylor Hall's on there, but does not have a number assigned. What number did he wear in junior? Do you know? Did he wear number 4?
Number 4. Yeah.
And that's why he wore it in Edmonton? Okay.
Yeah.
How about, you can't take 44 because Miles Wood, whoever the hell that is wearing it. Should I know who Miles Wood is? Who's Miles Wood? Do you know who Miles Wood is?
No.
Miles Wood was taken 100th overall in the 2013 entry draft. He's 20 years old. He's from Buffalo, New York. And, of course, he spent last season with Noble and Greenow School. Why does he have a number assigned to him? He played one regular season game last year for the Devils.
Didn't Richey wear 44 with New Jersey?
He sure as hell did.
How do you feel about that, New Jersey Devil fan?
Would I be okay if Taylor Hall took Richey's number?
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that because I'm sure Taylor Hall would have buried that shot in 94 against the Rangers. That's all I'm saying. He's part of the reason. Him and Fetisov. Him and Fetisov, man. Him and Fetisov are the reasons we lost 1940. All right. Well, that's the show for this day. Anything else you want to add? Anything to look out for on your end of the ledger, sir?
I'm still waiting to hear the big debate on Chris Russell. Aren't you?
Sorry, where he ends up?
Yeah, where he ends up, what the price point is, what the term is, because that's going to be the analytics versus old school debate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there's the, oh man, rugged, tough, shot blocking defenseman, yeah, old school guy versus the, you know, he's getting starched in his own zone. He can't get the puck out. That's why he's got to block shots.
Someone's going to give him the money he's looking for, but I do find it really odd he didn't sign on July 1, though, don't you?
Me too. I thought he was going to be I thought he was going to be a late afternoon signing, but here we are. Now, having said that, because this is the curse of the show, as we go off the air at 6:37 Eastern on Wednesday, July 6th, he'll be signed by 7 o'clock Eastern tonight somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. It probably won't be Toronto, though, will it? Toronto.
Nope.
Hey, what last thing? Go ahead.
I was going to say, interesting thing about that, bring in Roland Pollock. Does that mean that Frankie Corrado is going to have to play the I'm scared to go on waivers game again?
Maybe. But what were you and Sammy talking about with Austin Matthews? I have been away. I haven't seen all this. Why was everybody having a big old boner for Austin Matthews today?
Oh, because he skated?
They showed practice vids of him like firing it off the post and in, and it just looked beautiful.
Yeah. So.
And he's wearing blue and white.
Because he skated.
Yes, he skated. He skated good.
Oh, my God. Is this how it's going to be?
Oh, yeah.
Sammy didn't have enough loose skin to blink all afternoon. We had Visine to try to moisten his eyes. He couldn't blink.
We interrupt the Prime Minister's speech for this special report.
Austin Matthews notched his first assist tonight in a game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. A marvelous pass on the power play, setting up a Morgan Rielly blast.
Get used to it. We now return
to the Prime Minister. And that's why we have decided to go to war!
Justin Trudeau taking Canada to war.
We interrupt this Prime Minister's speech with a special report.
Austin Matthews took his first minor penalty tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets, a tripping minor, as he took down Seth Jones. We now return to the Prime Minister.
Many of our boys will sacrifice their lives, but
we interrupt this special report.
The return of conscription. But first, Austin Matthews just rung one off the post. We go to breaking coverage. Team coverage. Oh, wait, that's been deflected by Austin Matthews up into a season ticket holder's lap. First souvenir puck, courtesy of Austin Matthews. Oh, that puck's going to the Hall of Fame one day. Track down that lucky fan.
Welcome to News at 11. Our top story is that the Prime Minister has announced that Canada is headed to war. But first, Austin Matthews was calling on the Kiss Cam tonight in a really hilarious scene. We bring you team coverage.
Austin Matthews has changed both the pattern of his blade and the lie of his stick. We now go rinkside at the Air Canada Center for this breaking development in stick technology.
And then, of course, 3 years from now, Austin Matthews signs a blockbuster deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs for a $2 million a year base salary and cap hit, and the rest, wink, wink, will be made up in endorsements. Right, that's the way it works.
God bless,
right?
Scotia
playing
Bank,
in Toronto
God
means
less Canadian right. Tire. Yeah, just $2 million and everything else be.
You don't have to ever. Yeah,
he's been every Canadian Tire commercial afterwards.
That's right.
Hey man, Florida can play the no state tax card.
That's all we heard about.
As an advantage?
I know.
But it is true, though.
But isn't it against the
CBA? That money outside of his escrow is going
the
right into
the CBA violation would have been if I don't remember who reported it, but it was nonsense. The idea that he would sign a playing contract with Toronto and then an endorsement contract with Toronto, like some
could not do some, that. No.
Yeah, you can't do that against CBA, but you could do wink, wink, nudge, nudge, $4 million against the cap, and then Canadian Tire announces Steven Stamkos is their celebrity endorser. For $100 billion over the next 5 years.
Certain markets have certain advantages. Texas has no state tax. They kill you in real estate tax, but you know, Florida's got no state tax. They're using that as an advantage. Florida Panthers have done that. Tampa Bay Lightning have done that.
Dallas Stars have done that.
If Toronto can, you know, leverage corporate Canada to magnetize hockey players, why not?
Corporate Canada.
Yeah, man. It exists.
It certainly does.
You know I work for Rogers, right?
I was waiting for that. And this podcast is on Rogers, and we thank the Rogers Corporation for all of their hard work in putting together a fine product.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, we mean the Steve Dangle podcast, sponsored by Pango Pizza.
Yeah, Panago. Not Pango.
Whatever.
Pango.
Did I say Pango? I don't care.
You don't even know what pizza you're talking about.
I don't. I have never had it. The only pizza that I've eaten in Canada is? I'll give you a hint. I ate it at 3 a.m. with a dipping sauce.
Pizza.
That's right. Your boy was never happier than when he found a pizza by his hotel and was able to have delicious whatever the hell it was
dunked it in. Sit your drunk ass down in the lobby and eat a whole pie.
Oh, what guy. Am I, a vagrant?
Drunk guy in the lobby eating pizza?
I sat my drunk ass down at the desk in my hotel room and ate pizza. What am I, a savage?
Okay.
And by the way, next
time...
It's great. Every time I buy pizza when I'm in Canada and I'm hammered, I always forget that, like, when you buy a quote-unquote slice, it's actually 2 slices. So then I'm like,
yeah.
I'll get 2 slices, please. And then I come
That's
home and I'm
slices.
Like, wait a second, this is 4 slices. I only have 2 dipping sauces. Oh, God, I hate my life.
You know what you didn't mispronounce there? When you're doing your drunk impression, the word pizza.
Please.
I've told you my theory on this podcast before.
That's right.
Why pizza's the perfect word. It's
the
perfect word because you can never mispronounce. Folks, if you're new to this podcast, think about every single time you've been absolutely like you've
plaster
just been,
hammered.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Think of that. And then count the times you've mispronounced pizza. The answer is always zero.
Mm-hmm.
Zero. It is the English language's perfect word. No matter how hammered you are, you can always say pizza. And there'll never be any confusion. He wants pizza, guys. I know he's hammered. Get him a pizza. He just asked for one.
Thanks to George Richards. Thanks to producer Sam. Thanks to you, Merrick. And thanks to me, Greg. And here's another one of life's perfect words. Bye.
Well, thanks to Sneakers for the cameo as well. Take Sneakers out for a walk so you can go play with the doggies.
What a princess she is.
Yep.
Yipping and yapping. She, by the way, when she swam for the first time, we were at a park and it was in sort of a shallow pool. It was like when you had a wind up diver man in the bathtub.
Yeah.
When you wind it up and put it in and it just makes a big circle. That was her. And then she got the hell out and she's like, I am never doing that again. But we know that she can swim. That's all we needed to find out.
Atta girl.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you soon, and thanks for listening to the podcast.
Woo,
bye.
Podcast. Cool podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.